The National Broadcasting Company presents Eyes Aloft.
Army flash. One. Single motor. Low. Scene. Five, William, three. Overhead. South.
Eyes aloft, watching the sky, watching for planes by the lane drop above. Eyes aloft.
Eyes aloft. The 4th Fighter Command of the United States Army Air Forces, in cooperation with West Coast radio stations, dedicates this official weekly radio program to the 150,000 volunteer civilian filter center workers and their ground observers, whose round-the-clock vigilance keeps watchful guard of the Pacific Coast against attack by enemy planes.
We'll help protect the USA.
Good evening. This is Harry Von Zell, pinch-hitting for your regular Eyes Aloft announcer, Ken Carpenter. Tonight, the 26th gala performance of Eyes Aloft brings to our microphone the commander of the 4th Fighter Command, General William E. Kepner. He has flown his plane from his northern headquarters to Hollywood this afternoon so that he can appear before this microphone tonight with a special message to his 150,000 volunteer civilian army. Also on this broadcast, you'll hear the music of Gordon Jenkins and the Hollywood Men. Filter Center News, released by the noted newscaster Sam Hayes. The 4th weekly winner of the Why Do I Come Here contest. Another great American story and the presentation of the handsome Eyes Aloft Gold Trophy Award. Here now is your Eyes Aloft narrator to take over the shift, Gain Whitman.
How do you do, ladies and gentlemen? Today is a sort of a birthday for us. This is our 26th broadcast. Tonight we are celebrating our first 6 months on the air, and we're indeed pleased that General Kepner can be with us. Yes, we are 6 months old on the air tonight. Fan mail now pours in from observers, filter center workers, and the military of the Aircraft Warning Service at the approximate rate of 1,000 letters a week. Be assured that every letter is read carefully. We thank you for writing, for much of the material for these radio programs comes from the letters you send us. We'd like to take just a moment to read a letter which just arrived, a letter from a soldier stationed at Gardner Field, a letter which I'm sure will inspire every Aircraft Warning Service worker. The letter, dated January 30th, reads,
Dear Eyes Aloft, I just heard your program and would like very much to have 5 copies of the poem, The Recognition. The one about the soldier on sentry duty who imagines he meets Christ. I'm writing this letter for the boys in my barracks, and we would all like to have a copy if that's possible. I'm in a guard squadron, and we too know what it is to stay up all night, walking around alone and just listening. It is good to hear your program and know the civilians are helping the soldiers who stay up all night to guard our wonderful country. I know what a swell country we've got, because I spent the first 6 months of this war overseas on a lonely island, standing guard over an anti-aircraft gun day and night. Sure gives a guy an awful lonely feeling. But when you think that there are others, soldiers, sailors, marines, and civilians at home doing the same thing, a fellow doesn't feel so lonely after all. So, as I've tried to tell you, that poem, The Recognition, sure hit the spot with us.
The letter is signed, Eyes Aloft Together, a Soldier. Private First Class Wallace Carmichael, Gardner Field, California. Well, don't you volunteer civilians of the Aircraft Warning Service feel a tinge of pride when you hear something like that from a boy who has been there and knows what he's talking about? Well, you have a right to be proud of your work with the Army. And now, let's turn to our Why Do I Come Here contest. Each week, we present a Treasury Department War Savings stamp book with $5 worth of war stamps to the person sending in the best 100-word entry stating why he or she continues to faithfully serve the Aircraft Warning Service. Also, the winner's observation post or filter center receives a handsome desk clock. Gordon Jenkins composes an original orchestral score to background the reading of the winning entry. Here is this week's winner of our contest, Why Do I Come Here? Why do I come here?
This week's winner, Bessie A. Simpson. Kalama Observation Post, Kalama, Washington.
Why do I come here? I have no one to give to save my land, while other women's sons must fight and die. Others must do the work, but I can stand hourly in cold or heat, searching the sky for friend or foe, and listening for the hum of flying death. Perhaps I cannot see. And I'm glad, God grant it never come, that I can give a little bit of me.
That is this week's Why Do I Come Here winning entry. Congratulations, Bethy A. Simpson of Kalama, Washington. Your prize of $5 worth of war stamps has been mailed to you. Also, you have won for your Kalama observation post an attractive desk clock. Because of the many excellent entries, we wish to give honorable mention to the following three contributors. Harry?
Books with $1 worth of war saving stamps have been mailed as honorable mention prizes to the following persons. Dorothy E. Frank, San Diego Filter Center, San Diego. Edna B. Loudon, 107 Oak Street, Kelso, Washington. And Patricia Galvez, Box 712, Galt, California.
Congratulations all. Volunteers who wish to contribute a 100-word entry for next week's Why Do I Come Here contest should address their entries to Eyes Aloft, Hollywood, California. Statements are based on originality and sincerity. Decision of the judges is final. Duplicate prizes will be awarded in the case of tie. Merely state why you continue to faithfully serve the Aircraft Warning Service. Maybe you will be a winner. In the 6 months that Eyes Aloft has been on the air, we have presented a wide variety of features. One of the most popular proves to be our new department, Filter Center News, edited by the noted news analyst, Sam Hayes. Here he is with the fourth edition of Filter Center News. Sam Hayes.
And good evening, ladies and gentlemen. This is Sam Hayes bringing you personal news items about Pacific Coast Filter Center workers from border to border. Bellingham, Washington. Hats off to Miss Nancy Hennessy, who works on A shift at the Bellingham Filter Center. Since Pearl Harbor, she has walked 4.5 miles to her work at the center 3 times a week. And some people grouch about gas rationing. San Diego. At noon today, members of Team 7B and 7D enjoyed luncheon at the Golden Lion. Mrs. Edna Jensen made the arrangements. Portland, Oregon. 4 Portland volunteers have just left the Aircraft Warning Service to adopt the uniform. Miss Almarine Wattenberg, Mrs. Evelyn Stenlake, and Mrs. Farrah Lee Rowland have enlisted in the WAC, and Miss Clarice Gates has joined the Waves. Note, if there are 4 other women in the City of Roses who would like to offer their service at the Filter Center to replace the girls who are leaving for war duty, telephone Atwater 9651 now. The number is Atwater 9651. Seattle, Trick 3F is glad to welcome back Mrs. Lou Key, who has returned from a visit in Washington, D.C. and New York. Mrs. Key has worked at the Information Center in Seattle since September 1941 and was supervisor for the first all-Chinese ship. While in Washington, D.C., she was entertained at the Chinese Embassy. Roseburg, Oregon, wedding bells. Wedding bells will ring the latter part of February for Wilma Pounds and Sergeant Jim Beaver, both of the Roseburg Filter Center. Sacramento, good luck to Dorothy Myers, Beth Lemon, Patsy Seuss, Catherine Harrington, and Mary Jane Brown, loyal volunteers, who are now awaiting their travel orders for military duty outside the United States. Note, will 5 other Sacramento women call and volunteer their service at the Filter Center to replace the women who are leaving? The Sacramento number to call is 25041, extension 372. I repeat, 25041, extension 372. San Francisco Information Center. A big bunch of gardenias to Nina Forbes and Vera Davis, who have both served over 1,500 hours without missing a day. Mabel Lay is training for nurse's aide in the California State Guard, and Mary B. Cook, with 1 son in the Army and 1 in the Navy, drives 35 miles round trip from Mount Tamalpais to do her job at the Filter Center. Port Angeles, Washington. The title Glamour Boy has just been won by Corporal James Ward of the Port Angeles Filter Center. As of February 1st, he had received 19 Valentines, and they're still pouring in. Who said Victor Mature was such a beautiful hunk of man? Redding, California. It was a big surprise for Emily Howard on January 28th. Members of Shift 1 showered Emily with birthday gifts. North Coast Filter Center, San Francisco. Ethel Simon, upon receiving her 500-hour pin, gave a rousing party to Shift 6. Starship 10 gave Camilla Stanfield a birthday party January 26th, where she received her $500 pin. Fresno, California.
I don't want this to get around, but it's being whispered that the girls of Ship 10 are simply thrilled with their new filter officer, Lieutenant Slyker.
And thus we close tonight's Filter Center News with this week's nomination to the Honor Roll of Service. This week we name Mrs. Negley F. England, Director of Civilian Components of the Seattle Air Defense Wing, who has served the aircraft warning service for more than 4,400 hours. This is your Eyes Aloft news reporter, Sam Hayes, bidding you one and all a very good evening.
Now I think we'll ask Gordon Jenkins and the Hollywood Men to give out with their arrangement of one of the brightest of the war songs. You're a lucky fellow, Mr. Smith. We're all ears, boys.
You're a lucky fellow, Mr. Smith, to be able to live as you do, and to have that swell Miss Liberty gal carrying the torch for you. You're a lucky fellow, Mr. Smith. Do you notice how highly you rate? You should thank your lucky stars, and I mean, you should thank all 48. And you've really got a family tree with Washington, Jefferson, Lincoln, and Lee. You're lucky to have ancestors like that. Don't you know you were born with a feather in your hat? You're a very, very wealthy gent. I don't care if you haven't a cent. You've got your American way. And brother, that ain't pay. If some poor sucker could choose, they'd love to be in your shoes. That proves that your good fortune's no miss. You'll find it mighty handy to see a Yankee Doodle Dandy. You're a lucky fellow, Mr. Smith.
Twice before, it has been our pleasure to have the commanding general of the 4th Fighter Command a guest of these broadcasts. He was with us on our initial program, August 17th of last year, and also on the December 7th Memorial broadcast. He is with us again this evening. We have a surprise for the man who has given his heart to this program. Approaching the microphone is our General Kepner and Robert L. Redd. General Kepner, take it away.
Thanks, Gaines. You have all heard the expression, the Army takes over. Well, this is one of those times, for I have disrupted the smooth-running routine of a major program and brought its writer-director, Mr. Robert L. Redd, to the microphone with me. Bob, this is a complete surprise to you, and I want you to forgive all of us for taking you away from the direction of this excellent program and playing this kind of a trick on you. You know, Bob, that the 4th Fighter Command awards a medal to Filter Center workers and ground observers for 500 hours loyal service to the command. You know, too, that a medal is also awarded to civilian supervisors of the Army Air Forces Ground Observer Corps for 6 months' continuous service. Well, Bob, you became entitled to the latter medal some time ago, but we have held out on you because we wanted to present the medal to you on this particular program, which commemorates the completion of 6 months of the program on the air. Bob, you have done an outstanding job for the volunteers of the Aircraft Warning Service and for the command. Through this program, you have told stories of loyalty and devotion to duty on the part of Filter Center workers and ground observers. You have shown where they fit in the defense of the Pacific Coast against air attack. And, most important, you have brought about a greater realization upon the part of the general public of their debt to these 150,000 volunteers. On behalf of the 4th Fighter Command, and with my personal congratulations for the fine work you have done, I herewith present you this medal as a small token of the regard in which the command and the volunteers of the Aircraft Warning Service hold you.
This is the first surprise party I've ever been to where anyone was ever surprised. Believe me, I'm surprised. I'm very proud of this, General Kepner. And to be presented with a pin by the general, by my commander, makes me doubly proud. I would like to say that this is not a one-man show by any means, because there have been so many, many of us working on it. And there's been Gordon Jenkins and Gain Whitman and Ken Carpenter and the actors, the radio people here of Hollywood, and the orchestra, and Bill Day's quartet, and the Hollywoodmen, and the King's Men. You could go on and on and on, and we're just proud and pleased to be doing what we can.
Thank you, Bob. I knew that you'd be very sincere in this. It is my sincere wish that circumstances might permit me to make a personal presentation to each volunteer entitled to the medal award. Since I cannot do that, I have made this presentation tonight to Mr. Red as a token of my appreciation to all of the volunteers who have received medals and to all those who, in the future, will become entitled to medals. I should like also to express my thanks and the appreciation of the command to the National Broadcasting Company, and particularly John Swallow, West Coast Program Director, to Gordon Jenkins, to Gain Whitman, to Ken Carpenter, and to all those who, during the past 6 months, have contributed to the success of this program. There has been an excellent spirit throughout the entire time, and I know that the 150 volunteers of the Aircraft Warning Service on the Pacific Coast join with me in saying thank you and well done.
Thank you, General Kepler. Tonight's new and true Great American Story. So often, people who live in small towns say, nothing exciting ever happens in our town. But things are happening everywhere these days. Take the case of the enthusiastic little Oregon community of Colton, located in the mountain foothills some 40 miles southeast of Portland. On the Wednesday of January 20th, 1943, something very exciting happened in Colton. It happened just like this. First, let us explain that the countryside was covered with a heavy blanket of first snow. Many roads were nearly impassable. On that early Wednesday afternoon, the snow began to fall again, heavily, silently. At the Little Colton Observation Post, a woman, Mrs. Bill Compery, kept watch alone. She was just putting another stick of wood in the stove when...
Oh, try to keep warm. Snow. More snow.
Mrs. Compery sat there alone, watched through the windows, listened, wondered to herself if the fall of so heavy a snow would blanket out the sound of some plane at Matt Price above. And then, as the observation post clock pointed its hands to the hour of 1 p.m., 14 minutes after 1, Mrs. Compery thought she heard the sound of a motor.
Wait, a plane? A plane, low. There, I can just see it. It's lost, circling. Can't see in the snowstorm. I've got to report it, it might crash.
Number, please.
Mrs. Freeman.
Yes?
This is the observation post. I mean, Army Flash.
One moment, please.
Oh, please hurry the call through to the filter center. He can't see. He's flying so low.
Army, go ahead, please.
One.
One.
Single.
Single.
Very, very low.
Low.
Scene.
Scene.
Portland, 75.
Portland, 75.
Circling.
Circling. Thank you.
Oh, I can't see him now for the snow. Oh, I hope that boy doesn't crash.
From the very beginning of the Aircraft Warning Service operations, the community of Colton, Oregon, has been most enthusiastic and cooperative. That afternoon, other observers in Colton heard the lost pilot's plane. They knew, of course, that the observer on duty would report. But to be doubly sure, other observers not on duty called the telephone office, talked to the operator, Mrs. Jessie Freeman, to see if the Post had reported.
Number, please.
Mr. Freeman?
Yes, who is it?
Walter Yost, an observer. Did the Post report that plane that's lost?
Yes, yes, Mr. Yost.
Well, I just wanted to be sure. I just saw it skim over the hill back of town.
Sorry to cut you off, Mr. Yost. Other called. Number, please.
Hello, telephone operator?
Yes?
Oh, this is Nan Nyquist. I'm an observer. I'm not on duty, but I just saw an airplane trying to land over in the Morin place.
Where?
On the Morin farm. I saw it. It's landing if it doesn't hit some trees or something.
Hang up. I'll tell the observer at the Post so she can make another flash message.
The observers of Colton, Oregon, were on their toes that Wednesday afternoon. They sensed that the plane was lost in a snowstorm. Quickly, they reported to the Army exactly where the plane was seen to be trying to land.
Well, at least I'm down. But where? Might as well get out and take a look around, see if I can make a fix. I better take off from here before this snow gets any deeper. If I don't, I'll really be in trouble. Let me see now. That must have been the Willamette River I followed. Lots of trees around. Gosh.
Bewildered, snowblind, no blind flying instruments in the little trainer plane he was flying, Lieutenant Joseph E. Sipper was lost. He landed safely, but he was lost. Through an uncanny act of fate, he had selected the only field in a 5-mile radius that was not plowed. As he stood by his plane, his motor still running, Lieutenant Sipper saw a man come running across the field.
Hey, are you hurt?
Oh, I'm okay.
I was driving down the road and I saw you land out here. Jumped out of my car and came over. Can I help?
Oh, I'll say you can help. Where am I?
We're just about 2 miles from the town of Colton.
Colton? Isn't that the Willamette River over there I've been following?
Willamette? That's the Clackamas. You're way off your beat.
Oh, you're telling me. Well, which way's due north?
This way, due north. Where are you heading for?
Portland. Well, if that's north, I got my bearings straight now. I better get out of here.
Are you going to try to fly off?
Oh, sure.
The snow's getting deep awful fast. Wind's up, snow's drifting.
I see. Yeah, look, will you help me lift up the tail and turn my ship into the wind? I can still get out of here and over to Portland.
For sure, glad to help. Just tell me what to do.
It was Frank Bratt who came to offer the pilot help. Together they wheeled the plane about so its nose faced into the wind. Pilot Sipper climbed in, waved goodbye, revved up his motor, and the little plane went plowing off through the snow.
Snow was too deep to get up enough speed for a takeoff. Brother, I'm really stuck here. Well, I'll taxi over by that tree and stay here.
Lieutenant Sipper taxied his tiny plane over by some trees, cut off the motor, and with a man who had come to help him, they went over to the house that stood on the edge of the clearing. It was the home of Jesse J. Moran, a logger.
See, Lieutenant, this is the house here. You'll have some protection at least.
Yeah.
I hate to leave you, but I don't have chains on my car. I think I better get back to it and get it off the road before I get drifted under.
Well, you run along, Mr. Bratt, and thanks for everything.
I'll tell the folks in town I found you, and they'll send help.
Okay, I'll go in the house here. So long.
So long.
Thanks, and see you later. Smoke coming out of the chimney. Somebody ought to be home.
Yeah? Oh.
Oh, you see me land my airplane out in your field a minute ago?
Airplane? No, where?
Oh, right over by the tree there, see?
Well, I'll be doggone.
What is it, Jesse?
Airplane landed on our place, Bertha.
An airplane?
Come on in. Don't stand out there in the wind and snow. Come on in.
Oh, thanks.
Oh, you're an Army flyer, huh?
Yeah, I got lost in the snowstorm. Hey, it's nice and warm in here.
Would you like a cup of coffee? Only take me a second to make it.
Say, that sure would be good.
You a captain or a general or something?
Oh, I'm a lieutenant, Lieutenant Sipper.
I'm glad to know you. My name's Moran, Jesse Moran. It's my wife.
How do you do, Miss Moran? You got a phone here I can use?
Oh, sorry, I don't have a phone.
Oh.
Well, you could take him over to Roy Woodward's place, Jesse. He's got a phone.
Yeah, you want to go over to neighbors and phone?
Yeah, better. I got to report my location into the Army base. I don't want him out in this weather trying to look for me.
I'll get my coat and cap.
Well, now, you wait a few minutes, Lieutenant. You need some coffee. Then you can go. It'll only be a minute.
What's this, more company?
Well, haven't had so many visitors to our place in a month of Sundays.
Oh, say not. I'll see who it is.
Is there an Army pilot here? His plane's out in your field.
Oh, come on in. Get out of the snow.
Oh, thanks. Quite a wind driving the snow now. Oh, you are here.
Yes, ma'am.
That's your plane, of course.
Yes, it is. I got forced down by the bad weather.
Are you alone?
Yes, ma'am.
And nobody was hurt. We heard you circling over town. The post reported you right away.
The post? You have an aircraft warning observation post around here?
We certainly do, and a good one. We reported you to the filter center with an Army flash right off.
Oh, then the Army knows where I am. Say, that's great.
About 3 of my observers, besides the lady on duty, reported you. My post is on its toes, Lieutenant.
Your post?
Well, I mean, I'm the chief observer at the Colton Post. I'm Mrs. Fordyce.
How do you do, Miss Fordyce?
Here's your cup of coffee, Lieutenant. Now, you sit right down here at the table.
Oh, this is quite a welcome you people are all giving to a stranger. Hey, that's good coffee.
How are you going to get your plane out, Lieutenant?
Oh, I don't know. I'll have to wait till the snow's over and then see what conditions are.
Well, I have my car outside. I can drive you back to town or help with anything you need.
Well, I would like to go somewhere and phone to the Army, make a personal report and get my instructions. Mr. Moran.
Yes, sir?
That plane's government property and it has to be guarded at all times. While I run into town and phone, would you keep guard of my ship?
You bet your life. I'll go right out there now, if you say.
Oh, I think you can keep an eye on it from the window here. Say, in case I have to stay around here a few days, have you got an extra bed where you can put me up?
Well, I can make up the couch in the front room, Jesse.
Well, I'm afraid the way the snow is drifting, the roads are going to be blocked to car travel. I hate to hurry you, Lieutenant, but I better get you into town, let you phone, and then bring you back.
Well, okay, we'll be on our way, Mrs. Fordyce.
I'll go on out to the plane. Take my gun with me just so I can back up here.
Well, you know, Lieutenant, some of my observers have been saying lately that nothing exciting ever happens at our post.
Well, your observers certainly turned in a neat job today, reporting one very badly lost flyer. I'm certainly indebted to them for letting the Army know so fast.
I wish my people could hear you say that. Some of them think their work isn't so important.
It's just about one of the most important civilian jobs anybody can be doing today. I'm certainly indebted to your observation post. Well, thanks, folks, and I'll be back in about an hour, I guess, to be your star boarder for a few days.
Mrs. A.W. Fordyce, Colton, Oregon chief observer, drove Lieutenant Sipper back to town. He reported by phone to the Army. Later that afternoon, other observers got a sleigh, packed it with canned goods and extra supplies, and drove the lieutenant back to the Moran place. For 3 days, Lieutenant Sipper lived with the Moran family, guarded his plane. When the weather broke, the Army came in with snowplows and a truck and hauled the tiny plane away. Today, Lieutenant Joseph Sipper cannot give enough thanks to the people who manned the Colton observation post for so quickly identifying and reporting his lost plane, and thus bringing him aid in a moment of dire emergency.
Each week, we present the National Broadcasting Company's Eyes Aloft Gold Trophy Award to some outstanding observation post or filter center. We are fortunate to have Colonel Ernest Moon, Executive Officer of the General's Headquarters, to make this week's presentation. Colonel Moon.
The Aircraft Warning Service was originally set up to aid in the protection of the nation from a surprise attack by the enemy. That is still the Aircraft Warning's principal mission. However, with the Army, Navy, and Marines operating so many training bases for flyers, the Aircraft Warning Service has automatically assumed a new responsibility. Time and again, the Aircraft Warning Service volunteer civilians have either saved a young pilot's life or have been instrumental in bringing immediate aid. The people who manned the Colton, Oregon observation post have done just that. On January the 20th, 1943, these observers joined in protecting a pilot and an Army plane. The people of Colton deserve recognition from the 4th Fighter Command, and we present to them this week's Eyes Aloft Gold Trophy Award.
Whitman saying goodnight to the 150,000 valiant Aircraft Warning Service volunteer civilians who keep constant vigil of our home front so that America will be ever safe from enemy attack by air. Good night.
Don't forget to send in your 100-word entry to the Why Do I Come Here contest. Perhaps you too can win one of the many prizes. Send entries to Eyes Aloft, Hollywood, California. Music on this program is composed and conducted by Gordon Jenkins. Eyes Aloft is written and directed by Robert L. Redd. This is Harry Von Zell charging you to always remember, Eyes Aloft.
Eyes Aloft, watching the sky, watching for planes flying the lanes up above. Eyes Aloft, always on guard, lending a hand.
This program comes to you from Hollywood. This is the National Broadcasting Company.
We'll cry, but a modern 20th century Paul Revere must watch the sky.